So we have a bit of an institutional reform coming from South America.
Please. No. And the second point is, of course, because it's like an inspiration, but it is also a fear, because that is why this graph is interesting, because you see that after the Second World War, you are more and more extra-European members that arrived in FIFA. And this context made, I think, two things on South American leaders. First, they wanted to reinforce the power of South American Confederation inside FIFA, because it's a small organization. It's only 9 countries or 10 countries, the South American Confederation. So yes, it's not really a power. So they wanted to increase the power. They said, South America, it's like Europe. It's really a forces in football. We have won World Cup. We have professionalism in football. So we need to have more place to securize more place in executive committee. And the second thing is, so Europeans said, okay, but if they want to securize this, what will happen to our power, our hegemony? And the second point, some of European leaders fear that South American leaders perhaps create some alliance with notably the new Asian and later African, countries. So it was like a fear. And of course, if all these new countries arrived, the power of Europe will be very challenged, because Europe is at this period only more than 30 associations, and 30 associations at the beginning of the 50s that are divided with Cold War. So it's very complicated. So perhaps we need to respond to this, and perhaps a solution is to create a regroupment that overcomes the political issues and do something good for the football governance in Europe.
Thank you, Philippe. And it's interesting that there is that tension between the American model as being a model to follow in the way that the South Americans, as you've described, are working as a block in South America, but they're also working with different alliances all the way up into Central America, the Caribbean, and North America through creating confederations in the 1930s and in 1946, if I'm not mistaken, for the North and Central Americans. So you have this American bloc in the 1940s, which is very strong, which is, in a sense, a political threat to the sovereignty of European member associations, without even getting into the question of decolonization in Africa and the rise of number of associations in Africa and then in Asia as well. Bless you, Lana.
Just on this point, you are right. In 1946, in Barranquilla, Colombia, you have the creation of a Pan-American Confederation. And so it's true that it is more than 21, 22 countries. So the European hegemony could really be challenged by this organization.
And what I think is fascinating, sometimes in history, we find these wonderful little insights into the way historical actors and agents are perceiving situations and what motivates their decisions. You've described, I noted this on page 83, right? You described the sacrifice that European associations made to give the South Americans more space in the reorganization of FIFA. And there's this wonderful, wonderful political undertone in that we have made a sacrifice so that you, the South Americans, when in actual reality, what you're telling us is that the Europeans are deeply concerned with the weakening of their political strength. In terms of governing and controlling the sport, that they're able to word it in this way that gives you a sense of their view on the rest of the world, which I think is very, very interesting. But I think that will segue quite nicely to the second section of your book, Philippe, which really discusses the actual formation of UEFA as an organization. And here I know you've been quite inspired by different work on European cooperations, Bahouze, and various other authors. But this is where I think there is an interesting question looking back on the South American model, because what the South American model teaches the Europeans is, well, we need to generate a monopoly on the control of European football. And that is essentially the core of your chapter 5, I think. Can you discuss a little bit with us, what are the key aspects of building the institution of UEFA, its legitimacy from an economic point of view, from a political point of view? What is it that gives it its actual monopolistic position? And how do they do that?
I think it's always interesting to discuss history, because it's revealed things that we are living now. Mm-hmm. And what we are living now is the challenge of UEFA monopoly. It's the challenge, the question of governance of European or regulation of European football. And of course, when they built UEFA between June 54 to March 55, of course, first, UEFA didn't have so many things to do, so it's a little bit tricky or strange, because on the one hand, I said that for European leaders it was important to create something perhaps new, to create a European organization, and on the other hand, finally, this organization didn't have many tasks. And the main goal were I think two. It was the idea to recreate an harmony. So if we organize a general assembly, if we organize some meetings, informal meetings, meetings on a referee, meetings on television, and so on and so on, it is the occasion for all these European leaders to meet themselves, to share also a discussion about football, but not only, to travel in the continent, to share a moment of sociability that are very important. So I think it's the first goal. The second goal was also to deal, of course, with topics, because we didn't have to forget that you have also change in society at this period. You have the arrival of television, you have the development also of the airplane and many other aspects that have an impact on the organization of football itself. And so they have to discuss about this, and also but to discuss about topic in FIFA, to create a European voice in FIFA. But of course, and perhaps you will ask the question, but where are the competition here? And when we thought now to sports organization, main task of a football or sports organization are also to create competition. So, but it's incredible to see the first UEFA statute, and you have seen it also, Kevin, and you know that in point four, the only competition that is indicated it's the European Championship for Nations. But it's not the idea to create it, it's the idea that one time UEFA could have the right to organize it. So it's very interesting. And what happened very quickly, it's like UEFA has to face with the creation of the European Champions Club Cups, this project led by L'Equipe and 15 clubs of Europe to create a European competition. And that was very new, because if you see here, you have on the map the Mitteleuropa Cup, the main competition of the interwar period. But if you seen 30 years later, the European Champions Club Cups in the 60s, you see that it's all the continent. So the creation of this competition make a new steps of the Europeanization of the game. It's huge at this period. So UEFA has to face to this competition, and if UEFA let it to the club and to the journalists, perhaps it could have a prejudice to his existence. So UEFA decided finally, in discussion with FIFA, to take over the competition. But it gave a new task, organize a competition. And then, as you know, FIFA gave also the organization to the continent of the youth tournament. New task, second competition. And then this idea to create a European championship for nations that was indicated in the statute. Some federation wanted to create it. So finally, discussion. And at the end of the 50s, UEFA created a new competition, and so on and so on. So finally, what's happened, it's with this idea of competition, it gave more power to UEFA, it gave more idea to people inside UEFA that wanted to develop competition, because they realized that UEFA could take a percentage also on the competition and have also a little bit more money to develop perhaps something in view to foster the European football's development. So, you know.
I think that's where there's an interesting discussion on different visions for what a European organization is supposed to do. And what we see in this period, of course, in the 1950s, is the growth of various European ideas. We have an economic idea of Europe through the economic market, which is developing slowly. We have a political idea, different political ideas, some which are led by the Federalists who meet in Montreux in 1948, and they have a specific vision of a political Europe, which is different in many respects of what actually ends up coming in with the Treaty of Rome. But you have different visions of Europe, political, economic. You have a democratic approach, which is interesting, because when you get to UEFA, which is functioning with no purpose for the first two, three years, real clear purpose, as you said, which is fascinating. There is a mission to be a unifying, there is almost more a vocation than an actual job, if I can distinguish between the two. There is a mission, but there is not a specific cahier des charges or description of what UEFA is supposed to do. And what's fascinating is that there's also a tension there, because you say that UEFA is supposed to be a unifying body. But let's discuss one just briefly. You can explain this a bit. The unification relies on a common geography. And I think one of the things that you touch on here is that geography under UEFA is a debated topic. What is European for UEFA? And the borders of football in Europe, of Europe as a football body, is not the same. We have the question, maybe you can discuss Turkey and Israel, and that will lead us into the question of blocs with the Eastern Europeans as well. So I think there are competing visions, geographic, political, and economic, of what an international organization or a European organization is supposed to be in the 1950s. And UEFA is trying to figure this out, it seems to me. And the last thing I would ask you to touch on is as well, in that definition of a geography of Europe, how does UEFA navigate the Cold War? Because that will allow you to discuss Chapter 6. From in the late 40s, when the Eastern Bloc is being brought into FIFA, you have la politique de la chaise vide. So you have the empty chair by the Russian representative who is being there, but is playing a different political game and saying, I'm occupying a seat, but I'm never coming to meetings and I won't participate, but I'm holding that seat. So how does UEFA define geography? How does it manage this political geography of Europe in the 1950s?
Just if I put a map. Yeah, so you have the map of the countries that participate to the first meeting of European regroupment of European bodies that didn't name UEFA in Basel, 15 June 54. It's not the name of UEFA, it's a European body of European Federation inside FIFA. And it is only in March 55 that you have the first General Assembly in UEFA, of UEFA. But what is interesting, it's you see you have all Europe, Greece, Romania, and Poland will join then the organization, and it's more problem with visa, problem with airplane that explain the fact that they didn't participate to this meeting in Basel. So the first thing is for the European promoters, the idea to create a European body, it is all Europe, you know. So all what they thought to be Europe. That is so it's not possible to create something that is divided by Iron Curtain. It's a nonsense. They thought that first football is not leading by politics. So I think it's a strategy for me. But they put some mechanism to respect this strategy. They always choose a general secretary from a neutral countries. The first president of UEFA was
neutral but Western.
Of course, Western neutral. They also deal with the financial autonomy. So they didn't want that they received money from one state, but from all the national federations. But you have different kind of mechanism. But what is important for them, and I think that is related to what happened in the interwar period, when Europe were not divided by Cold War, and for them to create a European organization, it's all these 33 European countries. Okay, so Europe, it's, and they follow in this sense, I think, the geographical borders of Europe, which were defined by the geograph during the 19th century, from Ireland to Russia and from Scandinavia to Greece first. But after, of course, you have some problematic case. And I think the most problematic is Turkey, because is Turkey part of Europe or not? Regarding the geograph, they said, okay, perhaps Istanbul is, but not Ankara, you know. So. And so how UEFA deal with this? And it is interesting because the case of Turkey, I think, reveal very well the specific geopolitics of football. And it reveals if it's related to what's happened with Israel, you know. Why? Because Turkey wanted to be part of UEFA since the beginning. But the European Federation discussed, there was some countries that were agree, other not. So because we know that it could be problematic, notably for geographical reason, but also with Cold War, because Turkey was close to the United States and close geographically from the Soviet Union. We know that they use also United States, use the Turkey territory to put some missile or other things. So it was a tricky topic. But what is very interesting, finally, Turkey was integrated in UEFA. Why? Because some countries said, but you can, it's not possible to avoid Turkey. We have a relation with Turkey since the interwar period. And it was a case of Greece. It was a case of Yugoslavia. It was a case of Bulgaria, because in the interwar period you have the Balkan Games, and sometimes Turkey participate or Turkey play friendly games with this country, and this country really supported the fact that Turkey could be integrated in UEFA. And finally, when the headquarters of the Turkish Federation changed or moved from Ankara to Istanbul, Turkey has this close connection with some of our members. The headquarters is in Europe, in Istanbul. No worries. Okay, Turkey can come officially. Regarding Israel, it's problematic, because finally, the arguments to accept Turkey could be also put on Israel. But the main differences, and I think that is very important, is the fact that Israel didn't really exist before the Second World War, and Israel didn't have really some footballistic tradition with European countries. And they are not really a country that said, okay, we have played against Israel since 20 or 30 years. So we want to push for the fact that Israel came in our organization. So Israel didn't really found many support regarding footballistic reason. And of course, as it was a state a little bit problematic with the relation with Germany, with the Cold War, it was more easier for UEFA also to keep Israel. So, but if I can put the hypothesis, if Israel would have been created in the interwar period, and that this country could have relation, I don't know, with other countries, I don't know what will happen. So.